You were listening to the 1 Million Cups of Appleton. We are a group designed to educate, engage, and inspire entrepreneurs in central Wisconsin and beyond.
All right. Well, hey, welcome everyone to 1 Million Cups. Really excited today to have Lynn from Clintonville. She has a new concept that has to do with educational videos. I won't give too much more info, but really excited to have a friend here from Wisconsin today. So Lynn, you can take it from here if you want to share your screen with us and take it away.
Okay, let me try this screen share. Do you see my screen?
Just don't see it yet.
All right, let's try this.
There we go. Now I see it.
Oh, good. Good. All right. Thank you. And I'm going to try and stay with you like I said, because I've been bounced out three times already. So here we go. Hello, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity to present today. I am Lynn Lignac from Linny B's Education Videos, and I'm going to continue to help in fighting illiteracy in America and helping children read to succeed. How did you learn how to read? Was it easy or difficult for you? According to statistics by the U.S. Department of Education, 14% of Americans are considered illiterate, which can lead to a lifetime of poverty, crime, school dropouts, and a number of other social problems. Imagine drifting out to sea with no life preserver. Many Americans face this scenario every day when they are required to fill out forms, read instructions, help children with schoolwork, and other daily situations which require the ability to read. I am now a retired kindergarten teacher, but I saw firsthand results of a lack of educational materials and stimulation in the home. Five-year-olds were entering kindergarten only knowing the letters X and O. Although they had the ability, they didn't have the experiences, language development, or developmental skills that lead to success. My goal is to ignite the spark for reading skills in children, much like what a spark plug does for a car. How will I accomplish that task? By creating short educational videos for preschool-age children, which focus on developing pre-reading and reading skills. Videos will incorporate lessons on letter names and letter sounds, along with how letters and sounds work together, such as rhyming, word parts, and syllables. And I will do this in a fun participatory format that takes into account the short attention span of the preschool age group, while maintaining interest and motivation for learning. The process of reading requires putting all of the pieces together like a puzzle in order to obtain the finished product of a successful reader, much like putting all of the ingredients together when baking a cake. The challenge lies in differentiating myself and learning how to compete with the video games and other electronic media that is so prevalent in the world today. I plan on using movement through music and using fun, engaging activities that children don't even realize that they are learning and will be activities they remember for a long time. All of us can probably recall advertising jingles we heard that became earworms for days on end. A former coworker attended a workshop and where the presenter said, "Sing it, eat it, put glitter on it, and they will remember." That is definitely true. I'm sorry, I missed a slide there. I'm sorry. The use of music is definitely effective for knowledge retention. I also saw this in my classroom after reading and singing concept books that taught colors, shapes, numbers, and letters. The children loved them, went to them at free reading time, and were able to retell and sing the stories to themselves and their friends. Repetition is a powerful tool in helping to develop reading skills. Children also become savvy enough to know if you change something in a story that they have heard over and over again. That is proof that they really were listening. My focus is on this age group because this is a prime time in a child's life for brain development and language acquisition. Children naturally want to move, and for those children that learn kinesthetically, this format gives them a chance to use that modality along with auditory and visual modalities. My lessons will include a story time. Colin Powell said, "Every child needs a laptop." He didn't mean the computer, but wanted to emphasize the importance of human interaction in the learning process. One of my favorite times of the school day was when I could just sit with the children and read to them so they could just relax and enjoy a story. This is not always found in homes today due to lack of materials, time, or any number of other reasons. Reading to children provides the ability for them to develop good listening skills, hear good modeling, tone, cadence, beat, pattern, voice inflection, and to experience the human aspect not found in computer-generated or animated programs. Many parents have become frustrated with online and virtual learning during these months of stay-at-home schooling due to the pandemic. They are overwhelmed with the responsibility of teaching your child after a day of work, taking care of household responsibilities, not knowing how to help, or simply not having well-developed skills themselves. They find it hard to motivate their child to sit in front of a computer for hours while the children complete drill and practice tasks. Many parents are in agreement that education in front of a live person is a more effective way to learn. I want to be that person that children look forward to seeing on a daily or weekly basis, someone who they can become comfortable with, who they learn from, and who would be that familiar adult they can come back and relate to, just like their own teacher in their own classroom. My challenge lies not in the creativity of the videos, but in the marketing aspect. I need to be able to reach the students who need me the most, but may lack the necessary resources to be able to participate. One final thought before I conclude today's presentation is that students need to start school with skills they need to be successful. I want everyone to be able to read to succeed, so I'm excited to hear your ideas on how I can accomplish this task. Thank you so much for your time.
Awesome. Hey, thanks so much, Lynn, for the presentation today. If you want, you can cancel the screen share. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, thank you so much for your time today and for the presentation. That's really exciting.
Thank you. I'm a little bit nervous, but...
No, it didn't sound nervous. Hopefully at all. You did a really great job. It was awesome. Love the presentation as well. So now we'll get into the questions. And so from the crowd, if anyone has questions, now's the time. I'll start though. Lynn, I'm curious to know, and I don't think you mentioned this, but how long were you in education? How long were you a teacher?
Well, if you include student teaching and all of that stuff, 35 years. But I worked at one school district for 31 years. So 30 of those years were in kindergarten.
Wow, that's cool. Awesome. Yeah. And so this is obviously your life passion, would you say?
Yes. Yes, I would say so.
Cool. Yeah, that's really cool. Any questions from the crowd? Feel free to chime in. Otherwise, I can go for more. But there's questions from people.
I've got a question to throw out there for everybody for Lynn. Lynn wants to create videos and put them on YouTube for kids and parents to be able to access. And she had some questions for me yesterday about monetizing, right? Like a YouTube channel, what does that take and what does that look like? And I really have no idea. So if any of you have any insight for her, could share, knowledge with her about that, I think that would be super helpful for her.
Was someone gonna chime in?
No, go ahead.
I was gonna say, so I don't know, YouTube changes frequently in terms of what qualifies for monetization, but I actually believe that you can get monetization relatively early. You have to decide like how many ads you wanna put into your video and all that kind of stuff. I think you have to get past an initial push of like so many followers or so many subscribers and views before you get to that point. But I would just say this, you need to bank on not making money for a long time before making a living or really just making anything from YouTube. Because the monetization rate really requires a huge following that will take a while to get up to that point, at least from my insight. I don't know if anyone has more experience than that. I'm speaking mainly from a friend of mine does some videos on YouTube, that he's trying to monetize, and it's like 3 years or something. He's been building this content already and still isn't making a living for sure. But yeah, Eric, did you maybe, were you about to say something?
Well, what I was gonna say is, where's Brian Davis when you need him? Because that's the person you should probably put her in touch with, because he is monetizing a YouTube station right now. So you can he's got a lot of insight into it. And the other thing I was gonna say is, because like Andrew touched on, with being that YouTube's return is so low, I think the approach would be use YouTube as the marketing platform and try to drive everybody back to like a subscription, you know, make a catalog of basic classes that are free on YouTube, but that then push people back to some sort of subscription service that they could subscribe to. And that's where you would make the bulk of your money.
Would that be housed on a website, Eric?
Yeah, you'd have to get some sort of like course website that would have the entire catalog. They would pay, I don't know, whatever the subscription fee for it is. And then the YouTube videos would just push them to that for, you know, it would have a free educational video. And at the end, they would say, hey, for more content like this, check out such and such website. And you could also, I don't know, you're going to have to check into it, but like, I would think on, you could utilize Udemy or Skillshare and also push courses to them.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're going to, I don't know enough about Skillshare and Udemy to know if they would allow you to then market people back to an external website, or if they're going to say, no, you can't do that. But that's,
there's lots of though, like pre-built hosting sites that are like what you see is what you get kind of builders for like building subscriptions. Like I've seen people use a system called ClickFunnels for this, which it's really was intended for like marketing people through a digital funnel, and it can be really complex, but they also have built out this like delivery system as well for content subscriptions and that kind of stuff. So ClickFunnels would maybe be one to look into for like a pre-built system that could host, you know, paid access clients. I also know you can build that out in WordPress as well, but that would require, you would need to be really familiar with WordPress to make that happen in-house, or you'd have to bring someone else on to do that.
I believe though there are some pretty easy plugins that are available for WordPress that make.
Yeah, but you need like the challenge with that, and why I'm always hesitant to like push people towards a WordPress site versus a pre-built platform is because if one of your plugins breaks, you need to know what to do.
Yeah.
And like how to troubleshoot it. Because like that's a problem with WordPress is, I mean, you build up all these dependencies on plugins, and then if one of the critical ones breaks, you're done, or you have to like move quickly to fix it, you know. The other guy I was going to say is there's a guy named Marcos. He was actually at, I met him last year at Startup Wisconsin Week, and he started a company in Brazil that did like animation videos for kids. And they like were built up this entire brand, got monetized by like selling their character IP to like brands for marketing and stuff. But he's a guy that's done really well with this kind of like educational space for young kids. And I have his email, so maybe I can make a connection there, but he would maybe be someone to talk to. And they monetize YouTube as well, I think. But any other questions for Lynn today? Sorry, we kind of went off on a tangent there or on a long description.
Yeah, I have one, Lynn. With this, you know, a lot of schools such as Appleton School District, you know, not having it in-person schooling and stuff like that, do you feel there's more of a need for your product? And is there something that you can go after within that with the parents that are struggling, really, like you were talking about, that you know, a lot of parents, at least right now, feel like their kids are losing a year of school. Right. Is there anything that you offer like within that?
Well, I guess what I had intended was to get kids ready. And once they were in, say, kindergarten, because that is a prime.
Shit.
I guess
I'm sorry.
They're not unmuted. That's okay. What I have envisioned is that I would have weekly lessons teaching letters, sounds, all those types of pre-reading skills, just maybe to keep them up with their skills. I've heard too that parents are upset that their children are losing time or losing their education, which I believe is probably happening. It would just be probably a supplement if they would watch it. First of all, you have to get them to watch it and subscribe if that's what it was. But like I said, a lot of the people that need it the most aren't going to have the resources to be able to do it. So that's a challenge. I worked in a district where there was a lot of high poverty, and education was not the first thing that people would pay for.
So isn't there something like at the state level that you can go towards, for some sort of funding, for that type?
I haven't looked into it, but I could. I'm still kind of at the concept stage. I'm not quite sure where to go now. I know what I want to do, but I'm not sure how to get from point A to point B. That's where my challenge lies right now. I hope I answered your question.
Yeah, you did. Thank you, Lynn.
Hey, Lynn. I have to go in a few minutes. I apologize. I have another meeting, but it's really interesting to hear what you're doing as someone that is a former teacher myself, still working in education, supporting schools from like technology side of things, and then also a parent of a 3.5 and 1.5 year old right now. So it's interesting. I like what you're doing a lot. One thing that kind of came to my mind, knowing what I know about education and like your background, is have you thought about positioning yourself as, like an expert in building the like prereq skills that kids need coming into kindergarten, knowing that, there often is a range of, what kids are coming in with when they arrive. Like, I mean, I know a lot of times, kids come in already knowing the alphabet, and then other kids like come in not knowing any of their letters yet. And that's like a very hard balance to try to like catch kids up and like meet kids' needs that are like way ahead in that regard at the same time at the kindergarten level. So I feel like, you probably know a lot more about a lot of that than I do, but I think there could be like a cool way to position yourself as like the guide for parents that just don't know what their kids need to know when they go to kindergarten. And like kind of have it as like a, like use your, your like lesson planning, unit planning, like skills and ideas from like your many years in the classroom to like make it like translate in a way that like parents could know, to kind of like plug and play as like lessons with Lynn to make sure their kids know certain things and like rewatch, until they kind of like have mastered certain things, and like always just like pushing the idea to parents to like make sure their kids are prepared to enter school, like where they can easily move forward and progress. Cause I think that's what like so many parents are worried about and just don't right. know what that means. I mean, like even I was a middle school teacher, but I've worked with teachers from K through 12, and, like I even don't think I'm an expert, like for sure on like what my kids need to have when they enter kindergarten or enter preschool. And I probably have a better idea than most parents, to be honest with you, given my background. So, and then I think like, if you position yourself in that way, you could then like maybe partner with districts and like become the free, or if you're doing it on YouTube, or, the like subscription that parents could pay a small fee for, or whatever. Like that districts then are like pushing to their families and their communities as a way that they could be working towards, making sure their kids are ready to enter school and move at a pace that, they're being expected to do. and kind of like leverage that, like that experience you have as a teacher to like navigate those systems that I think like a lot of other like YouTubers like wouldn't have, you know, in terms of like backgrounds and skills and expertise in the same way you would. There also, I will say, like as a parent, have been a lot of YouTubers that have come out like teachers when they like stopped having like in-person class, like started filming lessons and just putting them online often, I think for their own kids. And then like they'd get traction and like just blew up. And so like, I would look up just like kindergarten lessons. Like there's someone named Miss Jamie. There's like another one named Miss Monica that like I know have like blown up in the last year, you know, but like see what they do. Cause like they're getting millions of views, and that could also be like another way to think about like leveraging some traction or like doing some low lift stuff that like, I mean, I'm sure you could run an hour and a half lesson or hour lesson in no time with your experience and put it online. And maybe that's some of your free stuff that's like your gateway into your paid stuff, you know, or something like that. So those are just a couple ideas because I'm really interested in your space before I had to run, in case that's helpful.
That's kind of what I had in mind, that I would post some videos and see what happened.
Yeah.
Kind of maybe not even as a business per se, but just there I am out there with my videos and see who's interested. If that's kind of the route to take, I know I've talked with Amy about YouTube, but if that's where putting my videos would go just to get started. Yeah, that's kind of, you're kind of on the same page as I am. We're kind of, that's where I was thinking. So thank you. Glad to know that might be a possibility.
Yeah, I don't know that it's like easy, but like I definitely think it's a possibility. And I think just like watching some of the people that are getting traction is like a nice way to see what's working for those types of videos too. Because I think that there's a lot of word, like keywords and algorithm and like number of posts per week and stuff like that, that I know YouTube will favor to like get you more recommended in their algorithm to more people looking for that kind of stuff too. So
okay, thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you very much, and I apologize, I have to run to a meeting.
Oh, that's okay.
You'll have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.
Yep,
you too. Thanks.
Bye. See you, James. Lynn, I will say one of the things that James kind of touched on that I thought was really interesting was using school districts as a distribution and referral network for you. You know, and I don't know if that's just a given, but I remember when I was working in educational software, one of the tactics we often used was offering school districts a free resource as a foot in the door for a challenge that they have. So in your case, it could be the challenge is parents don't know if their kids are ready for kindergarten, right? And they need a hands-free, easy way of getting their kids up to speed. You know, if you offer them a free resource that then points them to your YouTube channel, that then you could monetize when you get to a certain scale. School districts love that, at least from my past experience. Like anytime they can offer something for free to their parents, and if it's a resource that they believe in and can buy into, from just a, you know, endorsement standpoint, I've seen that model, like James said, work really well in education software.
Okay, because my question from the beginning was, is this even a viable idea? Is it something that can work? Or am I just, you know, playing around for a hobby? Is it something that I can really develop into something that is successful? I know none of us can predict the future, but
yeah, depends on how you measure success, right? If you measure success by helping people out, you know, and if that can be 100 people, if that's success, I totally think it's viable, and you could totally do it. If you're looking to reach millions and millions, it's going to be way trickier, but still, I think viable. You know, it's just it depends. You know, obviously set your KPI or your key performance indicator for what you would consider to be a success and then work backwards from there.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other, yeah, any questions for Lynn from anyone else?
I guess just to kind of touch on the, is this a viable business? Content creation is always viable. It's just Okay. It's patience that makes it work. So, and it sounds like you're going into this with the right approach, that you're doing this because this is what you love. And I think when you're going into content creation, that's the reason you need to be going into it and not be going into it to get a big paycheck, because it does take time to build that audience before that money comes.
Yeah, well, no one ever went into teaching to become rich, so any former teacher can tell you that. So, I mean, the money part is not, would be nice, but it's not my first goal, so.
Liz, awesome about this. Oh, go ahead, Mike. Yeah, sorry.
No problem. No, great presentation, and sorry I missed the front end of it, but I thought it was well done. But just a comment to think about. Your goods and trade here is content. So you've got copyrights are created upon taking your ideas and putting them into a tangible medium. And, you know, the tangible medium being digital, you know, is largely what we're talking about now, but, you know, obviously print for sure. But if, as goods and trade, if you are worried about people copying you or taking your stuff and you want to make sure you can stop that, consider copyright registrations. They don't create your rights, but they give you the mechanism to enforce, and it makes it easier to shut someone down, especially when you're posting content on the internet and stuff. And people generally will respect that. And it's not super expensive. So I'm an intellectual property attorney. I do that kind of stuff. So I'd be happy to talk to you. And I know I've talked with Amy's EC class, and maybe you were in that.
I was. Yes, okay. I am.
Good. So then you're thinking about that. So
yes.
Happy to field any questions you may have about that from time to time.
I was thinking of emailing you because I did have some further questions about, I know I'd asked you about music, and I know you can't just play anybody's music. You have to create your own. But as far as other things like reading a story, a common book you might find in the library, I wasn't sure how that would work as far as copyright. Is that allowable without getting into any trouble? Because you've already purchased the book.
No, but you've not purchased what's called the public distribution right. So the right to read to the public. Okay. So, and there's a whole bunch of buzz with all the home at home learning, and you know, and sometimes you can get permissions from people to do that, and that's the route you go. And if they don't give permission, they'll give you some royalty associated with it. But you can't just grab anybody else's content, especially if you're monetizing it in any way, shape, or form yourself.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. But that's like the lawyer response, isn't it? Because, to be honest, and I don't mean this in any bad way, but, you know, I think about this sometimes.
No, I don't mean it in any bad way.
But the thing you have to think about is you're never going to be able to, I think the chances of you, well, and Mike, I'd be curious to know your thought, because I don't want to like tell people bad advice, but like, are you in a better position to negotiate like rights to material if you've already proven that you have an audience and like, you know, that you've been able to be successful in the past? Cause like, I think about it, like if I, with no audience today, tried to approach a publisher and say, you know, can I read your book on YouTube? Do you think they would actually give me the rights, or are they going to want me to pay like 50 grand upfront because I haven't proven that I have an audience? You know what I'm saying? Like, do you have any advice to her in terms of like, how do you kind of like cart before the horse kind of situation? I mean, obviously you're not going to tell her to read someone else's property on the internet and monetize it, but does that make sense at all? I mean, like,
no, I don't disagree. I mean, from a leverage. Yeah. I mean, right. So practically speaking, when do you go try to seek that license, and do you, will they even talk to you when you're a nobody? And some of them won't. But then you make your choices as to who you affiliate and associate with in that regard. I'm just saying there's just a passage of a Copyright Act that was related to one of the stimulus bills, but there was two big changes in the Copyright Act and the Trademark Act that happened. And the big piece in the Copyright Act was people who are pirating stuff on the internet, because it happens so easily. And so the extra hammers that have been put in place to stop that from happening. Because it, you know, I mean, just think, if it's your work and you created it, do you want someone else out there? And it's one thing if they're doing it to, you know, reading it to kids for free sometime, somewhere, someplace, something like that, you're probably fine with that. But if they're then using that as a stepping stone to selling their stuff, why should they be able to do that for free? So, but there's the practical reality of it too. And when you're small enough, you know, you can play a bit of a beg for forgiveness game, but that's, you know, like I said, the recent change in the Copyright Act has really put a big kicker penalty in when you know what you're doing and you're doing the wrong thing. It's, I don't remember what it is, but I think it criminalized some aspects that never used to be criminal. And it's increased the monetary penalties. So it's just be careful.
I just remember, like, I think the Appleton Public Library, like, they read books digitally on Facebook Live, like, for kids these days. So, like,
but they're not monetized, you know, though, right? It's a
so that that's library, the that's
so they're the, yeah. And they probably have permission to do that from the when they get the books from people. And there are some exceptions in the Copyright Act when you are doing things for public performance purposes, you know, purely nonprofit. So
that's
the big crossing line, is when you're going from a for-profit aspect to nonprofit. So,
do you think Lynn could potentially not monetize to test her model and read books? You know what I'm saying? Like, have no monetization, read books, see if she can build an audience, and then, you know, talk about getting licenses so that she can monetize.
You could try that out. And then I think, you know, if someone comes, it's more, you can get a slap on the wrist from someone because you're not making money in the course of doing it. Now you are gaining some knowledge and market research and stuff, but yeah, it's really that monetary component. When you're making a dollar on it, then other people who have rights, if you're making a dollar on their rights, they're like, well, why shouldn't I get a piece of that?
Awesome. Lynn, you can tell I'm not a lawyer. So my advice is there's no good. Don't take my advice at all. Mike is the professional here. So listen to him.
Yes. Thank you.
And I think it's also important to point out that if you want to be reading books live on YouTube or something like that, there are plenty of classics out there that are out of the realm of any sort of copyright protection that you could be reading. And I sell a lot of books on a day-to-day basis, and I can tell you that kids love classic books. They love Moby Dick. They love Robinson Crusoe. They love these books that are out there that can be read freely, and nobody does anything about it because there's no laws to protect those books because they've been around for so long.
Good point, Eric. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, if it's in the public domain, there's even more current books. Certain authors, they just want their stuff out there, and they'll put it out there, and it's for free. So that's why I'm saying, do your research and find out. And There's ways to do all of
it. So things like fairy tales, nursery rhymes, no one even knows who wrote them. That would be acceptable without getting into any trouble. Like the Three Little Pigs. Nobody knows who wrote that one, unless you take modern version. But
exactly, I think like Grimm's fairy tales. There's if you can, you go to the Copyright Office and they publish every year stuff that's expired that has met its copyright expiration. And so, and you can Google search, and I've done that when I was in private practice or in-house with doing work for Kimberly Clark, that they said, can we use this or that phrase, or someone said, and so we Google it, and it's amazing how much stuff is out there that says, yeah, this one's, you know, still protected by copyright, or this one's not.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Lynn today? Awesome. Well, Lynn, this was a lot of fun, and I'm really excited to see where you take this. I think you have a really cool opportunity, especially with how easy it is to publish content these days using the internet, and then also with everything that's going on in the world. I think this is a really, really good timing on your part. The final question for 1 Million Cups is, what can the community do for you? So if you want to just answer that, what can we do for you today, Lynn?
Sure.
I think we lost her. Man, wow, how does that happen? Maybe come back.
Yeah. Good job, Eric.
Oh, there we go. There we go. She's back. She's back now.
She's on mute, though.
Hey, Lynn, are you there?
I'm back. Yes, I did check with my Frontier yesterday. They cannot promise when they're going to update our service, so I'm going to try and stay with you again as long as I can. My challenges in technology, how to get from point A to point B. You know, I've So far, we're like in week six of the e-seed. So I've gotten all that information so far. I guess I'm still at the point where I don't know what I don't know. I'm so technologically deficient, I would say, that I probably need as much help in technology as what I'm trying to give to students to get them.
Oh,
no.
Stupid frontier.
Technology's so great when it works.
Yeah, when it works. Yeah.
Yeah, again. Anyway, what happens. So that's where my challenge lies, the technology aspect of it. How do I go from where I am now to where I want to be? If there's anything else you can offer, I would be happy to hear it and to follow that path and see what happens.
Awesome. Yeah. So we'll keep this all in mind. And I think, are you currently part of the EC program? Did you say like you're in it?
Yes,
right now?
Yes, we just finished week six. So we've got four more weeks to go.
Awesome. Yeah, I definitely, I think if are you doing like a swarm tomorrow, like tomorrow evening? You know,
I don't even know what that is.
Okay.
Never mind.
but no, we should definitely connect, Lynn. What I love doing is helping people build minimal viable products, which is, figuring out a way to test out like how your concept without investing a ton of money into infrastructure or technology. So I would love to connect with you. And if anyone else has other connections I could help Lynn with the technology side of things, it sounds like that's her ask. Please keep her in mind for that. But everyone, thank you, Lynn, so much for presenting today. This is awesome to have you here today. And I'm really excited about where you're heading. Thank you to everyone else for joining us at 1 Million Cups Appleton. Eric, are we back next week?
I believe that we do have a presenter next week.
No,
awesome.
I'm sorry, not next week, but for like the 3 weeks after that we do.
So I have to ask Tracy now instead of Eric?
Yeah, it's probably better.
Anyways, thank you guys. So we'll see you soon. And if we do get a presenter for next week, we'll fill in everyone in. But otherwise, we'll see you in a couple of weeks here. Thanks so much for stopping in.
And thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you,
Appreciate you coming today, Lynn.
Thanks for listening to this week's speaker. And thank you for your continued support of 1 Million Cups and our community of entrepreneurs.